This week, I mightily sought inspiration for this service on peace. And honestly, I came up wanting. I have to admit that this is pretty lame for a minister. Peace, especially during this season, should be right at my fingertips or leaping from my tongue, along with hope and joy and love. And albeit love right now is a bit easier for me to manifest, but peace, not so much. I reviewed history for moments of peace, and to tell you the truth, they were few and far between. War, greed, discord, historically are much more prevalent in our world. Sad as that may be. But there was one story that spoke to me about compassion and tentative hope that we have within us that inspires a sense of peace. Many of you probably know the story already. It is that amazing. But it's worth sharing again, especially since we are rapidly moving towards the Christmas holiday. On December 7th, 1914, 104 years ago, Pope Benedict XV suggested a temporary hiatus of the First World War for the celebration of Christmas. The warring countries refused to create any official ceasefire, but on Christmas, the soldiers in the trenches, they declared their own unofficial truce. Starting on Christmas Eve, many German and British troops sang Christmas carols to each other across the lines. And at certain points, the Allied soldiers even heard brass bands joining the Germans in their joyous singing. At the first light of dawn on Christmas Day, some German soldiers emerged from their trenches and approached the Allied lines across no man's land, calling out Merry Christmas in their enemies' native tongues. At first, the Allied soldiers feared it was a trick, but seeing the Germans unarmed, they climbed out of their own trenches and shook hands with the enemy soldiers. The men exchanged presents of cigarettes and plum puddings and sang carols and songs. There was even a documented case of soldiers from opposing sides playing a good-natured game of soccer. Some soldiers used their short-lived ceasefire for a more somber task, the retrieval of the bodies of fellow combatants who had fallen within the no-man's land between the lines. The so-called Christmas Truce of 1914 came only 5 months after the outbreak of war in Europe and was one of the last examples of the outdated notion of chivalry between enemies in warfare. It was never repeated. Future attempts at holiday ceasefires were quashed by officers' threats of disciplinary action, but it served as a heartening proof, however brief, that beneath the brutal clash of weapons, the soldiers' essential humanity endured. During World War I, the soldiers on the Western Front did not expect to celebrate on the battlefield, but even a world war could not destroy the Christmas spirit. I can only imagine that after one met and spent time with their enemy, per se, it would be much harder to fight them. But what this time in history shows us is that the inclination toward peace, even in the midst of war, could be present. Compassion and kindness might also be present. It was also not lost on me that a similar act or a moment of peace has not been repeated since. It's now forbidden by the military powers that be to have a spontaneous ceasefire without prior permission. Removing spontaneity, compassion, and love from the military equation altogether. Peace in places of conflict is hard to find. I grew up in the 1960s and 1970s. Let's be honest, I am still in the process of growing up. And I advocate for lifelong learning, but that's another sermon altogether. My earliest images of peace were the peace signs that I saw on the nightly news inscribed on posters held up by protesters around this country and around the world, really. The 1960s were all about hippies and flower children and the burning of draft cards, love, peace, and the age of Aquarius, filled with waves of wonderful music and energy of the time. It was in the 1960s when I first saw the image of Tricky Dick Nixon on the stairs of the presidential helicopter holding his hands up, a peace sign on either side. It is an iconic image that is burned in on my retinas for some reason. He projected himself as a guy for peace, even though he was far from such an advocate. We learned recently from his Oval Office tapes that he had done everything in his power to scuttle the Vietnam peace talks of 1968 to enable him to get leverage in the election. Compassion. Peace. 1960s were some of the most tumultuous times in history and were very formative in my little life. The decade began with the Cuban Missile Crisis in October of 1962, probably the closest that we have come to nuclear war, followed by a year later by the assassination of JFK in 1963, to the ongoing and lucrative Vietnam War that started in 1955 and continued through 1975. The struggle for equality against racial oppression, segregation, and the murder of people of color, to the assassination of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy in 1968. Followed in the next decade by the battle for women's liberation, gender equality, lesbian and gay rights, it has taken me much of my life to realize that war and conflict in general is all about stealing and securing power and resources for oneself. It is not so much about doing the right thing or stepping in when wrong is being done. I've never wanted to believe that humankind, and specifically those in power, made choices based on personal gain alone. But more recently in history, I'm starting to realize that's exactly what's going on. I've wanted to believe that ultimately, when given the opportunity, like we saw on Christmas in 1914, that people would make the right choice. Peace, love, compassion, kindness, equality. History has proven me sorely wrong, as greed and self-interest and the grab for power has taken precedence over and over again. It's a sad state of affairs. How did I then retain my optimism and hope and survive my earliest memories of the drills where we hid under our desks? The fear of nuclear attack was always in the back of our minds as children. We became a generation of disgruntled and disenfranchised young adults, demanding, protesting, and working for a better, less establishment-run world. After all of this time, you would think that we would have made some type of progress. And some days we have and do make progress. But we also have periods of backsliding like are unbelievable. Like we are in now, where women, people of color, the poor, anyone who's not white, male, and privileged are treated with total disdain. Even with what seems like good political news this week, there are still deals being crafted in back rooms, sealed documents, and a reality we can only guess that exists. We cannot even see the tip of the iceberg, not to mention what lies under the surface. This is why, in desperation this morning, I reached out to the monk of peace, Thich Nhat Hanh, a man who grew up in Vietnam, coming of age during turbulent times in a country primarily Buddhist in belief, under a regime that was trying to establish Catholicism by crushing the faith of 90% of the people. Nhat Hanh arrived in the West in 1961, serving as a professor of comparative religions at both Princeton and Columbia universities. He soon became a voice for peace in this country and a dissident in his own country. He would travel back and forth between Vietnam and the United States in support of spiritual awakening and transformation in the West, and in support of his monk brethren and the people of Vietnam as they stood for the right to practice their faith, Buddhism, in their own country. There is a photograph that has haunted me my entire life. I'm sure that you have seen it, and I'm sure it haunts you as well. The story goes that in June of 1963, a Vietnamese Mahayan Buddhist monk, Thich Quang Duc, burned himself to death at a busy intersection in Saigon. He sat in Zazen, the lotus position, and never moved or made a sound as gasoline was poured over his body, and he lit the match, catching himself on fire. He was attempting to show that to fight all forms of oppression on equal terms, Buddhism, too, needed to have its martyrs. John F. Kennedy said in a reference to the photograph of Duck on fire, "No news picture in history has generated so much emotion around the world as that one." Complacent and loving Buddhists had taken a memorable stand for their faith. In 1996, Thich Nhat Hanh came back to continue his work in the United States, although there was some pushback about allowing him to enter this country, until Thomas Merton, an American Trappist monk, writer, theologian, mystic, poet, social activist, and scholar of comparative religion himself, wrote an essay called "Nhat Hanh, My Brother," which helped Thich Nhat Hanh to enter this country. It was at this point in history that Nhat Hanh was exiled from Vietnam for the balance of his life, only being allowed to return in 2006 as his life drew closer to an end. Born on October 1st, 1926, Thich Nhat Hanh is 92. He is in poor health. It was Nhat Hanh's words that brought me back to myself when I struggled this week thinking about peace and thinking about all we have been through. He explained in the reading that I shared with you this morning, in our daily lives, our bodies are present, but our minds might be elsewhere, caught in our projects, our worries, and our anxieties. Life is only available in the present moment. The past is gone. The future is not yet here. When we establish ourselves in the present moment, we are able to live our moments deeply and to get in touch with the healing, the refreshing, the nourishing elements that are always within us and around us. There it is, a simple truth that can enable us to get to a place of peace and to seed peace and love and compassion wherever we go. Just stay in this moment, right here, right now. Give this moment all that you have. You set the stage for the future right here and right now. Do you believe me? Do you believe that this moment is that important? Unitarian Universalist minister Reverend Leslie Takahashi shares salve for the heart when she explains, "All that we have ever loved and all that we have ever been stands with us on the brink of all that we aspire to create: a deeper peace, a larger love, a more embracing hope, a deeper joy in this life we share." Any guesses about the brink that she speaks about? The brink that she's referring to is right here, right now. Not in the past, and what we have endured or what has been done, although it's important to remember not to repeat the mistakes, to be able to see the patterns so that we can respond in this moment. Nor should our time be spent gazing off into the future, missing what is happening right now. We can plan for the future, for the best or worst scenarios, but do not let it sway you from living completely into this moment, fully present, fully engaged. The Buddha taught that love, compassion, kindness, enlightenment, fear, greed, anger are all small seeds that reside within each one of us. The seeds that we water and feed right here and right now are the ones that will grow. Buddha encouraged his students to focus on the seeds that they wanted to sprout and to ignore the seeds they wanted to wither. That makes a lot of sense. I know that in my life, I've not always focused on the places that I wanted to grow, and instead focused on the places I wanted to remove from my life. It was my mistake to put my energy where I didn't really want it to go. And I'm guessing that we all have and do make this same mistake. And I would estimate that we make this mistake a lot when it comes to bringing peace into our lives. Many times I have caught myself thinking that I could control all of the things. Anybody get that feeling every once in a while? Right? There's a couple of us. Many times I've caught myself plotting and planning ways around, strategies around or through the challenges in my life instead of avoiding them, instead of not giving them any time. I let my focus pull me right into the middle of exactly where I didn't want to be. I truly hate that. And I hate the fact that I have done it to myself. I have no one else to blame as much as I wish I did. Does this sound familiar? Peace. I believe that during this time of the year, when the daylight lasts for such a very short period of time, thus we spend much of our time in darkness, this is when we face the challenges, the anxiety, the frustration, the dwelling on and suffering because of. Instead, let us look and see all that resides in the dark. Each one of those, as I like to call them, kerfuffles. And as an opportunity to pick and choose what seeds we want to actually water and feed. We want a life of peace and happiness. Don't we want a life of peace and happiness? We must cultivate peace and happiness in this moment and spread those seeds of peace and happiness to others. No matter how hokey it may seem to say, I want to spread the seeds of love, to let the love shine in. The joy, the peace, the compassion need our attention during a season that in large measure focuses on greed and consumption. We have the power through our focus and actions to make it otherwise. In order to reduce the suffering in our world, for our suffering to be less, we must reduce the suffering of others. And when you hear what we need to do, it feels like it should be easy, but it's not. Here it is. Are you ready? We must listen to one another with an open heart and an open mind so that we can better understand how we can help commiserate and how we can create peace within ourselves and for with one another. We have to listen to one another. That means we have to actually speak to one another. It's not as easy as it sounds. So here is your mission, and there's no choice. You must accept it. Sow the seeds and water them through our collective presence and listen to and witness for and to one another. That's what we're doing. We're giving them love. We're giving them peace. We're being compassionate. And then guess what? We're actually going to listen to them. And we're going to try to lighten their load. Instead of worrying about what we're going to get whomever for Christmas. 'Tis the season of peace, my friends, a time to let the ground rest and to become fertile once again. It is a time to pick and choose what we will seed and grow individually and together. It is a time to listen and to give generously from our hearts in this moment and the next and the next and the next. Just like in 1914 when the Germans and the British came out of their respective trenches and brought unsanctioned Christmas to one another, they chose to imagine, they chose to trust, they chose to give the gift of peace. Let us be Santa's little helpers, capable and called to spread love, to spread happiness, to spread joy and peace to all who are in need. And we all, trust me, are in need. And remember, all that we have ever loved and all that we have ever been stands with us on the brink of all that we aspire to create, a deeper peace, a larger love, a more embracing hope, a deeper joy in this life we share. Let us take a moment in silent reflection, meditation, and prayer. May it be so. Blessed be. Amen.